Well, if I seem a little bit scattered this morning, that's because I am. Less than 24 hours ago, I was sitting in a dormitory in Tucson, Mexico, leading a closing circle of Unitarian Universalists who had joined me for a College of Social Justice week at the Borderlands. I got into Spartanburg about 10:30 last night. There's no one happier than that about that than Becky here, who was on standby to do the rest of the service. I'm also a little bit scattered because it may have been a life-changing experience. And I really was not looking for a life-changing experience in going there. I don't mean to say it's just a job, but usually when I lead delegations, I lead them in Haiti. I'm more familiar with the situation there. This was more of a last-minute call where they needed me to go, and I said, okay, I don't really know that much about this part of the world, but I'll do it, and I'm sure I'll learn something. Boy, did I learn something. Now, it was amazing in many ways, and it was a delight to accompany 12 Unitarian Universalists, mostly hailing from the UU Fellowship of Marion County in Florida, but also a couple from Asheville, as well as one brave Catholic woman, a friend of one of the women from the UU Fellowship in Florida, who was originally from the Dominican Republic. There was also our co-leader, Indira, the education director for the organization Borderlinks, who educates people about immigration issues. Just 2 weeks ago, she was granted U.S. citizen. She had come to this country when she was 10 years old. It was 6 years before she had residency status and another 11 years before she was able to get her citizenship. Even though we were there in this connected world, I certainly heard about the events of Friday night, and I pondered whether I should scrap this service and do something else in light of the Parisian bombings and shootings. But I decided no. In fact, in some way, these two things are related. Europe, as you know, has been experiencing a flood of refugees coming from terror-torn and war-stricken areas to the south. The flood has become a deluge. And not surprisingly, within hundreds of thousands of migrants, there are a few people that have used this as an opportunity to creep in and wreak havoc. In North America, we've experienced migration from the south for many, many years, but also in recent years, in the past 2 decades, some date it back to the passage of the North American Free Trade Agreement, there has been a flood of migrants coming north. Very much like the migrants that go to Europe, I do not think these people always intend to stay. If conditions were adequate, if there were jobs available, if communities weren't war-torn or gang-driven or in fear of the guns of soldiers or the guns of organized crime, they would very much like to return home. As we heard in the words of Dr. Martin Luther King in our responsive reading earlier, we are all in this web of mutuality. And somehow, we must find a way to live together. And although in the case of Europe, religious differences are usually brought out as the source of the conflict, and no doubt there is many horrific ideologies out there, we cannot ignore the behavior of the elites of this world, of the haves, and the situation for the have-nots, which do not always align with skin color or race. or nationality. I saw many things this week, many things that I wasn't expecting. And in fact, it was actually a crazy schedule. We rode around in this van. We crossed over the border of Mexico into Agua Prieta. I don't know where you're from, and that is, it's way south. So this is a border town right across the border from Douglas, Arizona. We spent a night there and visited some Mexican families and other things. We rode around in this white van, and I think at one count, we realized we had gotten in and out of this van 36 times. I guess I shouldn't say that if I'm hoping you'll sign up for a UCSJ border trip. It was 36 times round trip. It's really only half that. And I've pondered how to share some of that experience with you today. The reason I wanted to do this sermon today is I knew it would be fresh in my mind and all the things I saw just still rolling around. On the other hand, how to squeeze almost a week of nonstop experience. So I decided to use a lottery system. And I don't know, is there someone who would like to pick the first card? And I'll tell stories until I think it's time to stop. And my guess is I'll have time for three. Would someone like to pick a card? Thank you. Do you want to read it first? Sorry.
The Sanctuary.
Right. The card that Erica picked says, The Sanctuary. And some of you may have been familiar with the sanctuary movement of the 1960s that harbored conscientious objectors to the Vietnam War. There have been other sanctuary movements. I found out an interesting thing. Although there is this concept that if someone is in a religious site, in a church, then they cannot be arrested. You might remember that in the story of Les Miserables. There's actually not a federal law that says that. And yet, nevertheless, we tend to honor that. Even someone who is thought to have committed a crime, if they seek refuge inside a church, and the church allows to stay there, then they will be left alone, or traditionally have been left alone. It was actually a momentous week in Arizona around sanctuary. I don't know if it really made the papers here or in the national news. The Southside Presbyterian Church in Tucson, Arizona, had been giving sanctuary to a woman, a mother of two young children, who had been in the United States for over 10 years. She had been picked, she had no papers, and she was going to pick her children up from school one day when she was pulled over because there was a construction zone and she didn't know which way to go and sort of was weaving the car around the cones that were there. Her name was Rose Robles. So Rose's situation, she was handed over to Immigration and Customs Enforcement. And despite a number of appeals, eventually, and this took actually several years, she was given a deportation order, and the appeals ran out. And she knew she did not want to leave her family. She had not been in Mexico for years and years. Her children and her sons were there. And so the Presbyterian Church, in Southside Presbyterian Church in Tucson, offered her sanctuary. This was not the first time that they had done this. They had done it for a man named Daniel in 2013, Daniel Ruiz. And after 28 days, an agreement was reached with the Border Patrol and the Customs and Immigration, and he was allowed to go free on, I don't know, some kind of legal agreement that would allow him to continue to stay. So even though they were nervous about it, as Pastor Allison Harrington told us, they decided to go ahead and take Rose in and steeled themselves for another long months. It would be 15 months before Rose could walk out of sanctuary without fear of arrest or deportation. That 15 months ended on Wednesday. Pastor Allison was scheduled to meet with us on Wednesday. That got moved to Friday. And when she met with our delegation, she spoke about her faith, how they didn't all agree with what should be done about the laws and immigration in her congregation, how they were a small group of only 100 people, but how they all felt that their moral mission, their mission to be the hands of Jesus Christ, in their words, trumped what they needed to do legally. And it was not an easy decision for them, especially, as I said, as the days stretched into weeks, stretched into months. They held a vigil every night for Rose, for the idea that she and others like her could find a path forward. And we were the first group that Reverend Allison met with since she had not had Rose by her side to speak in her own words about her situation. It was a momentous day. Who else would like to pick a card? I thought about that. I should put a hyphen in there. The co-op. although the co-op did have a coop. So we crossed over into Agua Prieta, and we spent the night in a community center there, and then we loaded up and rode around in the van and saw many things. And one of the places that we visited was a struggling and starting up women's cooperative. And three of the women there cooked and fed us this amazing lunch that they had made. And this was an area of Agua Prieta that was just grinding poverty, is how I would call it. And Agua Prieta seems to be a town of many extremes. There are some beautiful places. We went to a shopping mall, and then there are areas like where this women's cooperative was. And at this women's cooperative, we learned that these women, most of them had come from far away. They had come from far away in the southern part of Mexico because their families thought either, one, they would somehow make it across the border where they knew that there were jobs, but also to work in the factories along the border, in the maquiladoras. And so the women were there. They were home taking care of the children, and their husbands would go and find work in these factories there. And they were, unusual for Mexican culture, certainly, was that they had no extended families there. So they were there usually with their husband and their children. And so they didn't have that usual network of cousins and aunts and uncles, and how isolating and alone they were, and how they had no source of childcare if they had wanted to work. And also their husbands' wages were so low, and this is something we looked at while they were there. The wages that the factories were paying, they were jobs, and so they took the jobs. But when you compared those with the cost of things in the supermarket that we went to, with eggs and milk, if we did an interesting exercise where we compared the cost of eggs versus the amount of hours that one would work for the wages that people were being paid in those factories, the cost would come out to be something like $8 for a dozen eggs, $40 for a box of diapers. So the women told us about that. But also what they did was they took us around and showed us what they were trying to build there. They had gotten a small piece of microfinancing, and they had created a little community garden for themselves. And every woman was required to work in this garden that wanted to be a member of the co-op. They were also learning to sew, and they were making handcrafts of various kinds. And they said that this had given them a sense not only of sisterhood with the women around them, a way to create family where they didn't have that, but also a sense of pride and a reason to get out of the house. I was so impressed by the fact that they had hope, even in such a situation, within sight of our border wall. Oops. All right. Who's next? I mean, I need to get somebody from a section over here, maybe. Oh, hang on, I'm going to go to this section. Sorry, Charlotte. Sorry. There you go. Pick a card, any card. You can spread them out. Oh, yeah. Okay. You want to read it?
The courtroom.
Yes. Yes, I will. So we went to the courtroom. We went to district court in Tucson. Judge Markowitz presiding. This is a beautiful new courthouse, shiny and clean, large and expansive. And here we got to see justice of the United States of America. We filed back into the back of the room. And as we were seated there, 70 Latina appearing people were marched in. Their feet were shackled around their ankles, as well as they had handcuffs around their wrists and chains around their waist attached to the handcuffs. You would have thought that this was a pack of murderers. They were marched in these shackles, despite the group of armed deputies as well as Border Patrol people in the courtroom. And they sat and they had headphones on so that they could hear translations of the proceedings. This was the operation of what is known as a streamlined court. And these courts were set up in 2007 to discourage migration across the border by creating sort of a fast way of deporting, but also a way to criminalize and then put people in prison who have gone over the border. Oftentimes we read these statistics about how many criminals are coming across the border. It bears researching what's behind those statistics. Surely there are criminals coming across the border, real dangerous people. I have no doubt about that, just because there's real dangerous people that already live here. At the same time, I don't think it is the tens of the thousands that are put forward in these statistics. What we have done is made tens of thousands of people into criminals with laws that say, if you come into the United States, you are committing a crime. So then if they go back across the border and try to come back in again, then they can have a felony on their record because they are now criminalized. So these 70 people, we watched and listened as they were brought up in rows of 7 or 8 and stood before the bench. Their lawyers behind them, the lawyers that they had just met, usually a half an hour before, each of whom had 6 or 7 clients to attend to, and listened to the proceedings, which were very civil. They were asked if they had been coerced or bribed or threatened in any way into saying yes to a plea bargain. It was all agreed that they would plead guilty, and in return for pleading guilty that, yes, they had crossed illegally into the United States, they would not have a felony this time put on their record, but they would have a criminal record, a misdemeanor, and so that if they came back into the United States again, they would be imprisoned for a longer sentence. However, even at that time, they were then given a sentence from anywhere from 30 days to 180 days in a detention center. Detention centers are for-profit prisons. And this is an industry, this is an issue of its own to look into. And that's where they would be sent. And among this group, interestingly, there were four women among the group, and all the four women each received the 30-day sentence. And the men's varied. Sometimes it was as short as 30 days, but usually it was longer and up to 180 days. They were wearing the clothes that they had been picked up at. And most of these people were people that had just, within a few days, had been found near the border, but some of them had been found far out in the desert. But they were still wearing the clothes that they had been worn while they were picked in. Some of them asked to be sent with their brother to a detention facility. And these people would then be shipped at our taxpayer expense to various places around the country, detention centers in Florida, in Portland, Oregon, I don't know, probably in North Carolina. As they filed out of the courtroom, each row, after they had agreed to their plea bargain and received their sentence, some of them looked into our faces. This was tough for us. We wanted to radiate some sort of compassion or sympathy or hope. We argued later as we thought about it, what the role of the judge was and all the people in this proceedings. One of our group was very angry. The judge was participating in an unjust system and he should have recused himself. And that's an option, and there is some pressure to ask for lawyers and federal officials to recuse themselves from if they think this is an unjust system. And I don't know this judge's stories. As the people were given their sentence, and he said it in a very quiet voice, I heard him say, "Good luck." I know. But then part of me thought, well, what else is he going to say? And I don't know what the choices are in front of him. I've thought about writing him. Because when I heard him say good luck, the way he said it, what I really think he was saying was, I'm sorry. And perhaps if enough of us become educated, we can give him a way to not just say good luck. Okay, I'm gonna head over here. Let's see, you wanna pick a card? Hey, Susan, pick a card. Any card. Oh, okay.
Cafe Justo.
Cafe Justo. Mm-hmm. Oh. This will be the last one. I'm so sorry, I'm carried away. So Cafe Justo is a little micro industry in Agua Prieta. And I'm sorry I didn't get here soon enough with this, otherwise you could be drinking it downstairs. But see me afterward if you need some of this. Cafe Justo is a cooperative that was formed by an entrepreneur from Chiapas, Mexico. In the late 1980s, world coffee prices plummeted as international corporations got into the act, and their prices they began paying for coffee that had allowed for a few generations to survive in that area were a quarter of what they once were. And this is one of the things that contributed to northern migration, was the farmers there could no longer make a living on their land there. He too came north with his family, thinking that he would cross the border looking for work in the United States. However, he quickly rethought that and was in despair, could not think of what to do, but he began working with a Presbyterian mission there, and he came up with the idea of creating a coffee cooperative. And they pieced together some money and created a micro fund to get started. And interestingly enough, the church that supports this activity is in Greer, South Carolina. And So they started Cafe Justo. And Cafe Justo worked with a number of small farmers in Chiapas and now brings the coffee north where they have their roasting facility. And unlike much of the fair trade coffee that we get here, it's actually roasted there. And they found that that is the biggest value added thing that they can do. And they're employing a number of people there at the border, trying to give the message and create jobs on that side of the border, saying, no, you don't have to go north. You don't have to face that. And they're successful enough that while we were there, they were building the retail coffee shop. So if you ever get down there, look for Cafe Justo. My friends, I'm afraid for time's sake, am I right? We're done, aren't we? We're getting into, I saw people leaving because they have to go get their kids. I tell you what, if anyone would like to hear some more stories, we can talk more afterward. At this point, I think I need to bring our sermon to a close. You know, I didn't come away with any conclusions or any great answers about what to do. As I said, I didn't go with the idea that this was going to be a big mission for me or a big purpose. And yet now that I've seen what's going on there, and the one thing I didn't talk about, which you can learn more about yourself, is the wall, the border wall that's there. You see a picture of it on your cover of Service. That's a wonderful picture. It's a little bit of a misleading picture because it looks like she can slip through that wall. In many places, the wall is actually solid. I heard stories about people doing a joint Christmas caroling on both sides of that solid wall at Christmas time, where one son sings a Christmas carol, and then the people on the other side that they can't sing sings one back. What I did determine that I would do is learn more about this situation. It is a Gordian knot. Causes of immigration, laws, poverty. And the good thing about a situation that is so complex is that there are so many places where one might be able to make a difference. I've committed to learning more about the situation with immigration and border laws and driving factors pushing people north, and driving factors from here pulling people north. And I invite you to do the same.